Hi, and welcome to 50 Words for Murder. We are entering season two, and today I have a very special guest, Jennifer Santinello. And before I let her introduce herself a little bit more and tell her story, I want to let y'all know that we've done something a little bit different here. As a lot of y'all know, I like to do my research and due diligence before going into a podcast episode. But for Jennifer and her daughter Layla's story, I purposely didn't. I know enough to be dangerous about it, but this is going to be my first time hearing the full story with you all. And so it's a little bit different than what we normally do. But hi, Jennifer. Welcome. Thank you for coming and sharing your story.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Is there anything that you want to tell the people before we get started?
Just that everything I'm about to say is from my own perspective. I try to stick to the facts when I tell the story, but there is some opinion mixed in there. I try to let you know when it's my opinion, but I don't always do that. So we'll see how this goes.
So we love speculation around here, as long as, you know, it's defined as being speculative.
Yes, absolutely.
And here's what I can kind of say about with a little bit of knowledge that I know about your story. So Jennifer's from East Tennessee, Northeast Tennessee, where we've done a few stories that have come out of that area. And let's just say that law enforcement isn't exactly, in my opinion, always on the up and up out there. There's quite a bit of corruption. There's quite a bit of sweeping under the rug, which means if you have a serious case, it's oftentimes challenging to get it taken care of. And again, that's without me knowing very much about your story. I'm just making those assumptions going in. So with that said, what I can tell you is that Jennifer's daughter, Layla, was murdered a couple years ago. There's also another missing girl that I've heard going on about, which I don't know if you're going to talk about.
Wait, back it up. We don't know anything. We don't know who's murdered. We don't know. It's been 6 months and we don't know anything. We know nothing. So is it possible that she has been murdered? Yes. Is it possible she ran off with the circus? Sure. There's just so many. Okay, let me start from the beginning. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's start. And I'm sorry for making something, but this is why, like I said, I tried to go into this thing completely annoying.
I know, you're totally blind.
That's what I had heard. I'm totally blind. That's a little bit I've heard. So go for it.
Okay. Dates. 24th. June 24th was a Saturday, and it was a Saturday where my boyfriend was off, and so we had his daughter here and all of my kids and extra teenagers and friends. There was a lot going on that day, and sometime later in the evening, I get a text message from my daughter's account, her Facebook Messenger account, but it's not her. It is her boyfriend, who she is, quite frankly, glued to the hip with, and all the message says is, "Do you know if Layla is in jail?" And I'm like, what? Like, why would she? So many thoughts go through my mind. Why would she be in jail? Why is she not with you? What is going on? And I text all of those things to him, and he does not respond to me. I get nothing. So, of course, I call family. We all call the jails. We look hospitals. We can't find her in any of those places. I go to bed. The next morning, I wake up and I got a text message from my daughter from her Facebook Messenger account, and she's saying I'm okay. And it happened the night before. I was sleeping already, and I immediately wake up. My first initial are, okay, great. I'm glad you're okay. Why did he think you were in jail? I have no idea, Mom. She says she's at a friend's house. She's fine. She's safe. Don't worry. And the last thing I said was, you know, be safe and I love you. And she responded back to me with, I love you even more. I don't think too much of this. They did not have the best relationship. I don't know that there was any kind of physical DV or any of that stuff going on, but I know that it was kind of toxic and there was some controlling stuff going on and there was some narcissism and it just was an ugly situation. She's young. And I have been a young person in a relationship like that, and I knew to kind of keep my distance, but try to guide her in the best way that I could, and just always let her know that I was there for her if she ever was ready to walk away. So I kind of leave it alone. I know that he has access to this account because he was texting me from it the night before. They had been sharing a phone. About 4 or 5 months earlier, he had been arrested and he had her cell phone on him because she had minutes and he did not. And they took her cell phone and put it in evidence. And we tried like hell to get it back. They would not give it back to us. It was a whole ordeal. My daughter was not with him when he was arrested. She had nothing to do with it, but they kept the phone anyway. So now it's the end of June. She's left him and gone off on her own for a couple of days. She's having to borrow other people's phones to contact me and anyone else. He's all over her accounts trying to figure out where she's gone to, trying to track her down. I don't feel comfortable asking a lot of questions of her at that moment. It was like 6:45 in the morning. I don't want to call her. I don't know who she's with. I don't know. I don't want to wake anybody up. I don't want to ask too many questions because she doesn't seem to want to give much information knowing that he can find her. So I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe this is a good thing and maybe she'll call me later and I'll go pick her up and she'll just come home and everything will be okay. While all of this is going on, her boyfriend is in contact with me, trying to keep me worried, trying to keep her biological father in New Jersey worried. He is contacting both of us. I'm feeling the manipulation. I'm like, you know, he's trying to use us and get us all worked up to find her for him. And I don't want to do that. So I'm leaving it alone. The next morning, Monday the 26th, I get a message from him from her account again, and he's going on and on about how I don't know where she is and all kinds of terrible things could happen to her out there. And
Jesus,
like trying, really laying it on, like trying to get me really scared and worried. And I'm like, dude, I talked to her yesterday. Like, stop it. Leave it alone. If she doesn't want to be with you right now, just let it go. You're the one. I had heard about an argument they had had on Friday where he had said something like, you know, you need to get your shit together. And she's a very stubborn, pig-headed person. You say something like that to her, she's going to be like, oh, okay, I'll show you. Bye. I'm going to go get my shit together elsewhere. That's just who she is. And so I'm kind of understanding what's going on without having to even talk to her because I know her so well. And by the end of that day, I still hadn't heard from her. She still hadn't called to like tell me what was going on. That was strange to me. So I'm like, okay, this is getting a little concerning. That night, her bio dad and myself have a conversation. Like, should we call this in? Has it been long enough? I don't know. Let's wait until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. Then it'll be a full 48 hours. If I haven't heard from her, because she normally calls early in the morning. When she wants to have a conversation, it's usually early in the morning. She knows I'm alone, I'm doing my morning stuff, and no one's going to interrupt, and that's when we talk. So the next morning rolls around, and Dad had ended up, he was getting all worked up, he was upset, he couldn't sleep, and he ended up calling it in that night. Detectives went directly to the boyfriend's house and interviewed him first.
Because it's always the boyfriend when somebody goes missing.
And that was where she was living, you know? Yeah. And so she kind of left from there. That was the last place anyone had seen her at that point. So they go to ground zero. And I'm sure also because it's always the boyfriend. And it was 2 a.m. His mom was home. His brother was home. Everyone was home. They were all questioned. They all seemed to be cooperating, whatever. The next day,
real quick. So the listeners know how, because I don't want them to think, because I know she was, you know, of age. How old is Layla?
She was 20 at the time. She turned 21 in August.
That she's not, like, you're not dealing with a 14, 15, 16 year old.
No, yeah. She's a young adult.
Know that. Yeah.
As of the moment, she's considered a missing and endangered young adult. So yes. So now it's Tuesday morning. I find out that this investigation has started. I'm like, okay, great. Over those 24 hours, I had also reached out to a family member who kind of runs in the same crowds as Layla and her boyfriend did. And I'm like, find her. Find out where she's been. Find her. We had been able to track all of her, where she was up until like Monday afternoon. We knew who she was with Saturday, Sunday. Monday morning, Monday afternoon, we lose track of her. And now it's Tuesday. And so by the time I talked to the detective that afternoon, he had figured out that she was at the AmeriCorps Hotel the night before, acting crazy, acting strange, acting paranoid and afraid and hiding in the shadows and sort of like knocking on the wrong doors. I guess she had gone there to visit somebody.
What city was the hotel, the AmeriCorps?
It's in Kingsport. Okay, it's right here in where we live. Yep.
Okay.
And it's an extended stay. People live there monthly, weekly, that kind of thing. So what, from my understanding, she was there visiting somebody. And she had left the room. And when she went to go back to the room, she had forgotten what room it was and was like knocking on doors, but she wasn't acting right. She wasn't, it was weird. Witnesses said she was acting all kinds of weird. Just not her, so not right. And that night, and I'm getting ahead of myself. So now I know that she is at, so law enforcement believes that she's shacked up with someone at the AmeriCorps. This is Tuesday afternoon. They believe she's up there at the AmeriCorps, hiding out from Michael, the boyfriend, and here we are. Wednesday, I sent my ex-boyfriend and a couple of his friends up to the AmeriCorps to look for her. They get there. I knew the number of the hotel room she had been visiting. So they get there. They're pounding on that hotel room door. They're trying to get somebody to come out. Nobody comes out. Nobody says anything. And Michael, the boyfriend, and a bunch of his friends kind of like come out of the shadows. Like they were staking the place out. Like they had found out that she had been up there. And now they were also trying to look for her. So the group of them got together and spent that whole evening knocking on hotel room doors. There's a bike path behind the hotel that takes you into town. It's like a hiking, walking, biking trail. Yeah, it's called the Greenbelt. So they went up and down the Greenbelt. They went to the stores 10 minutes down the Greenbelt and were talking to people. And that is where we heard that someone saw her at the marble slab. But this is Wednesday. She was seen at the marble slab on Tuesday, but the boyfriend got like everything all screwed up. I don't know. Whenever he called and told me that stuff, I didn't believe him. I was like, you're making this up. Why would she go get ice cream after everything? She was just, I don't know. None of it made any sense. I don't take what he's saying.
I'm going to have questions. I have so many questions already. I'm going to let you finish the story, but I have so many questions already.
Yeah, there's so much. So I don't listen to what he has to say. And we spent a lot of time in those weeks going from the different hotels, the extended stays and those type of rundown places, like looking for her, bringing flyers, this, that, and the third. We start like a whole social media, Facebook campaign, help us find Layla, blah, blah, blah. A couple weeks later, I am outside the Traveler's Inn with one of Layla's friends from middle school who had come with me. And I'm about to go in there because someone had tipped us off that someone who looked like Layla was at that hotel. And I'm about to go in there and talk to a manager when Layla's stepmom in New Jersey sends me a screenshot of Layla's Cash App account and a request for $100. And it's, they will let me go. They won't let me go. Whatever the was like TW, blah, 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 blah. And we're trying to figure this out. And at first we can't figure it out. We're like, what is going on? So I am sending dollars to my daughter's account. Like, baby, are you there? Can you call me? Like, what is wrong? What is going on? And there's other person on the other end is telling us that he has her. He took her because of a drug debt and or they, I don't know if it's a male or a female at this point, obviously. And we need to send this money right now and she'll be released and like all of this. And so now between me and the stepmom, we're going back and forth with this person. We're trying to figure out like what's what. I walk into the Traveler's Inn and the person at the front desk and I are talking and all of this. And I don't know why, but I bring it up to her and I'm like, I just got the craziest like messages on her Cash App, like requesting $100 and they'll let her go. Like, I don't even know what to think. And the lady's like, it's a scam. It's a scam that's happening to everybody right now. people's Cash Apps are getting hacked and they're thinking their loved ones are that. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't really make any sense. Like, I get it's a scam, but like, this is, my daughter's been missing for a couple weeks now. Like, I don't even know. So we call the law. They kind of act like, oh, it's a scam. Somebody's messing with you also. But it continues. It continues for days and days and days. This person continues to ask for money and this, that, and the third. And we're sending everything to the detectives. And eventually they're like, okay, we're going to figure out who this is. They have to do a whole bunch of behind the scenes stuff to track down. They have to like get permissions and I don't know, things signed, whatever. It takes like 3 weeks, maybe longer, before they figure out where it was coming from. They raid the house. They were at that house for like 16 hours. It came from someone in Layla's life who I will not mention her name. But it was kind of a crime of convenience because she had been logged in on this person's phone to her Cash App account. And this person spent 3 weeks acting like he had her. And well, was going to give her back.
This answers like five of my questions because I like writing down all the things about the Cash App. So, all right.
It's insane. So we go through all of this. And so now it's getting ready to be Layla's birthday. And oh, a month has gone by. 4 weeks. Right. In the initial beginning, I'm like, okay, well, maybe she's just keeping a low profile, trying to stay away from Michael. Maybe she's just, I don't know. I'm trying to like wish it away, I guess. And I'm in a little bit of shock. I'm in a little bit of denial. She's going to come back. This isn't happening to me type stuff. But now her birthday is approaching. And at this point, I don't really feel like we're getting enough media coverage. I don't feel like things are going well with KPD at that point. I really didn't. We start emailing the news, the local news outlets, and I start doing TikTok videos, and I just start trying to push everything out there. And we decide to do a candlelight vigil for her 21st birthday. And that is kind of when it really hit me. My daughter loves her birthday. It's better than Christmas for her. She starts planning
especially
her birthday.
21. Especially
9. 21. I mean, all of them for her were huge. Like, you know, she's just obsessed with her birthday. It's like one of her favorite things. And for her to just be gone for that, it was starting to not make sense. It was starting to sink in that she might really not come back. So we plan the vigil. We have the vigil. Her dad and stepmom came to town for the vigil. And that Monday we had a meeting with the detective set up so that we could all sit down together and discuss what all they had discovered. And that Monday, August 7th, is when we discovered that my daughter, okay, the night she was reported missing, she was alive and well at the AmeriCorps Hotel. At some point, something went down and that made her take off into the woods behind that hotel where she spent the night. Now, when I heard this piece of information, my insides flipped because it's so unlike her. It's unlike her not to call. It's unlike her to get herself in a sticky situation and not call me. We did not have the perfect relationship.
Is that confirmed? Like, is that a story that somebody told you, or is it confirmed that she went into the woods?
The detectives are the ones who confirmed all of that.
Okay.
They swear she spent the night in the woods and she was seen the next morning kind of getting up out of the woods and crossing the field. There is a warehouse back across, like there's the hotel, a little bit of woods, a big field and a warehouse. And she came across that big field. It was like 7 o'clock in the morning. There was guys out there getting ready to go into work. And she asked a few of them for a cigarette and no one had one. And she said, okay, thanks. Have a great day. And went on her merry way. 4 hours later, she was seen again at the Marble Slab Creamery, sitting out behind the marble slab, no shoes, looking all disheveled, looking all distraught. There's a woman that works there, you know, invited her inside, gave her something to drink, gave her some ice cream, let her use her phone. She made one phone call. The police have tracked that person down, but they won't tell me who it is. That person never showed up to pick her up. She left and said she was going across the parking lot to get sandals or flip-flops or something for her feet and never made it. Was never seen or heard from again after that moment.
Are you part of the 26% of millennials and Gen Z navigating the complexities of going no contact with a family member? Picture this, your kids are growing up and inevitably the questions start coming. How do you handle those tough conversations? Well, we've got your back. Introducing Boundaries, the groundbreaking new book that helps you navigate the delicate balance between explaining no contact and instilling the importance of boundaries. Follow the journey of a little girl who, just like your own little one, starts questioning why certain family members are absent. Boundaries empowers kids with the understanding of limiting toxic influences and the importance of setting strong and healthy boundaries. When I was looking for a resource to help my own child, I discovered one just didn't exist, and even the therapist I spoke to about it said that a book like this was well needed. So I decided to write it, and with the help of several therapists, we fine-tuned it so that it's a strong resource to help you navigate these tough conversations and teach the importance of boundaries in a way that doesn't vilify anyone and in a way that is easy for kids to understand. So if you're part of that 26%, this book is your go-to guide. Packed with a powerful message and adorable illustrations, it is a must-have tool in your parenting arsenal. Ready to order? Head to justinontiktok.com or find the link in the podcast description. Because parenting is an art, and we've got the brush you need to paint a healthy, happy family picture.
We started an investigation before she actually even went missing. Is what I took from this whole.
That's good, though.
That's crazy.
But that's good that you
And then
did.
Because everyone thought that she was just partying or being silly or shacked up with some guy, nothing really happened for weeks. She wasn't considered a missing and endangered young adult alert did not go out on her until the Friday before the vigil, August 3rd. Over a month after she disappeared. So it was really kind of a mess in the beginning.
But I mean, I think it's a good thing that you all at least were preemptive enough that because for y'all, she was missing. And it sounds like it's behavior that was not like her. Because why wouldn't she call if you're, you know, without shoes in the middle of a field and you can make one phone call? Why not call you?
And there were witnesses and there were people that saw her and like offered help according to what I've heard, and she was just like, no, I'm good. Like I don't know, none of it makes any sense. None of it. It's just it's
a
big mess.
Piece somewhere there's a missing piece somewhere. That's why it doesn't
there's got to be. I don't know what it is. There was, in the beginning, I was rather disappointed in our police department. I'm not going to lie. I struggled. At this point, 6 months later, I do trust our lead detective. He's not from here. He actually was born and raised in New Jersey, just like myself. And I think that he really does have mine and Leela's best interests at heart. Him personally, I don't want to say that about everyone at KPD, but I do fully trust my lead detective. Like, I really, really, really do.
Well, for me, my biggest thing, what really kind of gave me an opinion about KPD, and for people who aren't familiar with the story, they can look it up, but Sean Williams.
Yeah.
When that situation alone, like how they could.
That's a mess.
Yeah, that's a huge mess. And for people who don't know, we're not going to
get
into
that. But I feel like that was Johnson City. Wasn't that Johnson City?
That was Johnson City. You're right. But that's this whole area.
Yeah, well, they're all connected,
they're all connected, Johnson City, you try cities, all that stuff. So anyways, well, so it's been 6 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
And have there been any updates?
Nothing new. Lots of rumors. There have been so many rumors. There were the first initial rumors had me laid up in my bed hysterical. I had to grow a thick skin to the dirty talk and the bad stuff, because
the rumors are brutal.
The first one, the very, very first one, came from one of the witnesses at the AmeriCorps Hotel. A little over a week after she was reported missing, there was a raid at the hotel. It had nothing to do with Layla, but of course, none of us know that. And this woman sends out a mass text and tells her friends that KPD is raiding the hotel, and it's because they found Layla deceased, beheaded, upside down in a garbage can in Johnson City, completely naked. And she knew this because a sergeant at the raid told her so. My insides melted. I spent 6 hours in my bed, hysterical. My whole family showed up to sit and wait for someone to come knock at the door and tell us. The call never came, and my boy's dad, Layla's stepfather, he was a Kingsport firefighter for 15 years, so he knows people, and he spent that 6 hours trying to get to the bottom of it, and it turned out to be complete crap.
She did this on a mass text message?
Yeah, to friends, to her friends, not to me, but to her friends, and then her friends started messaging us.
Okay, I'm going to say something about this. I know it's completely off. Like, I'm not in your situation, obviously, but that pisses me off to no end because first of all, rumors like that are dangerous. Number one, I'll address it in about 2 seconds. But the other thing too is, even if it were true, you as a parent have a right to know before anyone. And it is so incredibly disrespectful. Isn't even the right word for it. Like it's cruel and horrific that somebody would do that. And for me personally, I've become very protective over victims when it comes to this case or people involved or close to it. Cause I don't know how much you know about me or how long you followed. I don't think it's been very long, but you know, I got into the whole true crime thing with Gabby Petito, which by the way, as we're sitting here talking, I feel like it might be worth, if you're up for it, putting you in touch with Joe Petito. I think that could be beneficial for you. Obviously, I'm sure you're familiar with his story, right?
Yeah.
So, but then with Gabby's best friend, people were spreading rumors about her that she was involved in this illicit affair with Brian and that she was on the boat and she helped, you know, was involved in what happened to Gabby. And none of that was true. She was sitting in Florida grieving and crying for her best friend. And she started getting death threats. The same thing with Idaho. All these fake rumors start coming out of Idaho. And the thing is, people do it for, I don't know if it's attention, for clicks, views, likes, but there are real people. These are real victims. These are real lives behind this, and they don't realize how it affects them. And that is why I very much struggle with stuff like that. So I'm sorry that you went through that from the bottom of my heart.
No, you're absolutely right.
I can't even imagine.
True crime has become, you know, an American pastime and something for entertainment. And I understand why, because before this, I followed a lot of true crime podcasts and things. You know, listening to the stories it's mind blowing, right? And it's interesting. Yeah. But when you become the person on the other side of that, and this is like your real life, this is your baby, this is your family, and people do. There have been so many rumors and crazy things. The Sun printed some crazy nonsense about how Layla was having an illicit affair and spent 3 days shacked up in a hotel room with some guy, and none of it was remotely true. But the fact that like it can be printed and put out there as real information absolutely blows my mind.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely insane. And yeah, I mean, I get it too. The stories can be mind blowing, and when it's an unsolved case, even more so. People want to try to figure out like find it, and I get that. I think that's great. But I think that when you listen to this or you talk about this stuff, you know, people who do keeping. Don't sensationalize it. It's already sensational enough as it is. I mean, your story is already naturally sensationalized. You know, without people having to add extra aspects and parts to it. But you have to remember that there's real families behind all of this that are suffering and wanting somebody to come back. So,
and what you're adding is extra stress and strain and frustration and added pain to someone who is already hurting in an unimaginable way.
And even in other ways too, you can cloudy the investigation by putting
Stuff like that out there. It's dangerous. It's absolutely dangerous. There's been so much of that, and it's just It's very frustrating. And then there's like, there's also parts of the story I cannot share because law enforcement has asked me not to. And I don't, because I'm not trying to mess up this investigation. This is my child. And then people get like upset. The public gets upset because you're not giving all the details and you know more. I'm not here asking you to solve this case. I'm just asking you to share my daughter's face. And this way it's out there. And if she is out there somewhere, someone can see her and call it in. I'm not asking you to go and be, you know, a detective for me. Like, I don't know. It's just crazy.
So here's a question that I have for you. Okay. Obviously we know that you haven't gotten that many, you know, an updates. Have you gotten any indication that they believe she could still be in Tennessee, or do they have any idea?
They have not said either way to me directly. Okay. I can say that I feel like they believe that she's no longer alive. I'm not going to say that that's my belief, but I do believe that that is the angle that they're going with. I don't know exactly what all their reasons are. I just, from my perspective, I don't see them chasing down a lot of live tips. I don't see them. I don't know. There came a point in like the early September when they stopped giving full updates. I think some of that was because some information was being leaked from other family members that wasn't supposed to. But also, I think that it became more of a criminal investigation at that point. And so they had to like tighten up what they were sharing, even with family. But again, that those things have not been directly said to me. That's my feeling and what I think is happening. But no, they can't, they lately, and especially because of how loud I've been and how they don't want me to slip and give out stuff.
Yeah.
I've been like, well, my whole goal for the last 6 months has been to try and get her face national and the story national and put the pressure on whoever's got her or knows where she is or knows what happened. So, yeah,
we definitely need to put you in touch with Joe. And so we'll talk offline about that. But I want to be optimistic with you. And there have been plenty of stories. And like, I'm not trying to like get hopes up. I mean, I know that, you know, we can be cautiously optimistic, but there's a lot of stories where people who have been missing for months, years at a time are found alive. I mean, there was one recently, like baby Holly, who'd been missing for like, I mean, hopefully it's not this, but 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, Elizabeth Smart, they just found somebody else recently that was, I forget who they had been missing for whatever, that they were found alive. So, I mean, I think that, you know, statistically speaking, yeah, when people go missing and you don't find them, it's typically, you know, nefarious or sad, terrible circumstances, but not always.
Not always. It's a mixed bag, really. It really, really is. And sometimes it's an accident. Who was that young girl in California who drove her car into a ravine or whatever? They couldn't find her for weeks. It took them forever. And everyone thought something nefarious had happened and it was really just an accident. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a mixed bag. Yeah.
I remember that one too. It was strange circumstances, but you know, but people got her name out there, and I know you've been getting decent coverage. We're going to try to give you a little bit more. So we'll do more than just the podcast, obviously. And I think if you're up for it, you have enough followers on TikTok to go live, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's do a live too. This is a little, we'll talk about that. Okay. Let's put you in a live too. But, what else do people need to know? What, obviously share her picture, which we will put, obviously it's hard to do that on a podcast, but you know, we can share the picture and her story. If you have a flyer or whatever, send it to me.
Yeah.
And we can put it on Instagram. We can put it on TikTok. We can put it on X and,
of course, that'd be wonderful.
All of them. We can do that. But what else do you want people to know? We haven't shared before I ask you some more questions.
Layla is 4 foot 10 inches tall. She is 115 pounds. She had, at the time of her disappearance, her hair had been recently bleached and was starting to grow out. She's got a fair complexion, big, beautiful brown eyes, a big, huge smile. She is sassy and strong-minded and hilarious. She is a bright, beautiful light in the world for sure. She was last seen wearing a white tank top, black leggings, and was barefoot for some reason for quite some time, as I came to understand. And she was last seen in the Eastone Commons area of Kingsport on June 27th of 2023.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll share all that. So let me ask you some questions, because I know you said you have opinions and you can share your opinions. I wrote all these questions down about the boyfriend.
Yeah, I know. Everyone, it's like everyone goes straight to the boy. So, and I've gone back and forth with that.
It's almost always the boyfriend or husband. Almost always. Almost always.
From the way it has been told to me, the boyfriend doesn't have anything to do with it. At least law enforcement doesn't believe he has anything to do with it. Yeah. I have literally gone back and forth with this. In the beginning, I was like, he did something. Oh, and then there's also the text messages I got from her account. A lot of people will ask, how do you know that was her? I didn't. For months, I didn't. And I wrote law enforcement, like, please, please, please find out from, like, I need to know if this was actually her. I don't think I can survive very long without knowing. It's driving me crazy. They were able to determine what device her messages came from as opposed to his. They were able to determine what address her messages came from as opposed to his. And they knew after a while where she was that day. And it all traced back to the phone of the friend she was with the day that she sent me the messages. So it's like a 90% chance that it was her. There is that slim chance that he is smart enough to drive all over the place and log in on different devices, but it's unlikely. Okay. So there's that. A lot of people, that was like a big red flag for them. It was for me too, I'm not gonna lie.
It is a red flag, and you again, you know, going back to Gabby, that's what he did. Well, on his way back, he texted from her.
Yeah, phone. From different places and stuff. Yeah, it's crazy.
On the road. Yep. Yeah, and then the phone went missing all of a sudden.
You don't know Michael.
No, I don't.
He's not that smart. He's just not there. It's not he. No, no. I can't go into the reasons that I know that he is not smart enough to do that. But
and I'm not going to ask you to, because obviously I know there's things that you can't tell. And that, let's talk about that for a second too. So for people who are listening, I know that people want to know because they're interested in. And here's the thing though that people need to understand: we as the general public aren't entitled to know everything during an ongoing investigation. You know, what you might know and you can't share, you know, people need to respect that. It doesn't mean that she's not that, you know, in this case, Jennifer's not wanting her story out there, but at the same time, she can't jeopardize an ongoing investigation. And that's the same with other things, no matter what the case is. So I just feel like that's worth saying in this situation. So that's what you're doing. You're telling what you can tell without making law enforcement matter, jeopardizing a case. So do they have any leads on, I mean, do they have anything that you know of that you,
not that you I can't know talk of. About
that? That is so frustrating and disheartening.
I know. And when I do get updates lately, they're like very vague. We're on the right track and stuff like that. And like, they can't elaborate or won't elaborate. And then there's a law in Tennessee that technically they aren't supposed to share any information with anyone other than law enforcement. It's like an actual law. It's in the legislature. So they kind of hide behind that anymore. It's, well, I can't tell you, it's against the law. It's an open investigation, and you just have to shut up and let it be what it is. And it sucks, but
it really sucks to know that somebody might have some answers, some information about your child
that I would love to know. Exactly.
I'd go insane.
Yeah, it makes you crazy. But then there's times when I'm like, do I want to know? If I don't know everything, do I want to know just half of it? Like, I don't know. I don't know if I can handle that. I don't know if I can handle knowing half of it. Or even, let's say that they knew exactly what it was, but they were just trying to get the evidence to pin it on whoever. You know what I mean? If I knew who did and what they did and that they weren't going to go down unless there was evidence, like, that would destroy me. I don't think I could handle it. I don't think I could do this.
But you'd have to, but you'd have definitive closure at least.
Maybe.
Or, you know, so you'd have answers, at least something, even if they weren't something. Great answers. You know, so
or but if it's like only half of the answer, then yeah. It's like, I don't know. And then there's also like, what if she really, really is completely gone? And I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready for that yet.
I don't think I'm a parent. I mean, my daughter's 4, and I don't think that as a parent, you could ever be ready for that.
No, you're right. You can't
even
be.
If that's the case.
Something you can prepare for.
And so we're going to be cautiously optimistic. Because it does happen.
I know it does. And I know my daughter, and she's smart and she's strong and she's a fighter. And I just cannot imagine. It doesn't make sense. It wouldn't make sense. Like someone would have had to like deliberately, I don't know. I can't.
So what other, did you have any theories? Because it's speculations that you felt that you wanted to share. If not, that's okay. I know we talked about it at the beginning, but I'm not going to force you into, you know, saying anything.
I go back and forth. I do. I wonder if she has been manipulated into trafficking, or if she has been physically forced into trafficking. I wonder. I mean, I wonder, oh, that was the other thing. That's the thing that I always end up forgetting to talk about. And it's a huge thing. In October, another young woman by the name of Hollin Snap, 19 years old, 4'10", 100 to 115 pounds, vanished off the face of the earth. 5 miles, she was last seen 5 miles from where Layla was last seen. The fact that the two girls are kind of built the same, and they're small. They're almost childlike. It's like a type, right? My initial reactions to this were like serial killer or kidnapper or some like something. Like that was my initial like mind-blowing reaction. It's just then to come to find out that the girls knew a lot of the same people. We don't know for certain if they knew each other. But we do know for a fact that they knew a lot of the same people. They were kind of running in the same social circles, which is also extremely concerning. What is going on around here?
If it's trafficking, then there's somebody that's scouting and selling out. Is what exactly what that is.
Very possible.
Have you talked to her parents?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, we did a joint vigil back in November. We did a joint vigil for the girls, and we both try to remember to bring up the other girl when talking about our girl. I'm not always great at that. I get so nervous during these things that I try to stick to like the one streamline. And when it's over, I'm like, oh, darn it. I meant to talk about Hollin.
Yeah. And I meant to bring that up too. Cause I mentioned at the beginning, I knew that another girl had gone missing because I had heard that. But yeah. So I should have reminded you too, but I was so like, sucked into your story, which
it's crazy.
That is a very strange, we'll call it a coincidence. It is a very strange coincidence.
Yes.
And, I mean, you're a woman, so you know that there's a lot of men out there that are very problematic.
Yes.
And there's a lot of men who like I'm using air quotes here for people who can't see, a legal childlike individual.
Yes.
That's a different podcast and a different video, but it's, you know, I mean, trafficking wouldn't be better, but it would be better than the alternative, I suppose.
Absolutely. And then I go kind of back and forth with that too. Like, what is the best case scenario? What if she's somewhere and alive, but being tortured? What if, you know, she's being forced to do things that she doesn't want to do? What if kind of damage is being caused to her? And is it better for that to be happening because there's still a chance of, I don't know. I ask, that's a morality question, I guess. I ask that question all the time. I think about that all the time. Is it fair for me to wish that on her so long as she's still here so I have her?
I think I wouldn't beat if I were in your situation, I don't think I'd beat myself up. I mean, I know it's kind of like, I mean, they're both really horrific, shitty situations.
Yeah.
One of them, progress can be made with a lot of therapy.
Oh yeah.
The other one can't. So I think holding on to having one bad thing happen over another, which yeah, they're both bad. They're both real bad. And you don't want either to happen, but having that glimmer that your kid, you know, is not gone, you know, that's, I don't think you should feel guilty about that. Not that my opinion matters, but I don't think you should feel guilty about
that. No, I appreciate your opinion. Thank you. Without that hope, I don't know where I would be. I have to hold on to that hope that she is alive and out there somewhere. Otherwise, I would just be in my bed all day every day and unable to live my life.
Well, again, like I said, I know that your area, I'm glad that you have a detective that you feel is doing something. Because again, I always struggle with your area. You know, we talked about Sean Williams, and then I'm sitting here, I'm like, oh yeah, Summer Wells. That's another one.
That was a big,
Yeah. Which that one I won't even cover because that family terrifies me, but, yeah, that family, absolutely. I'm going to leave that at that, but that family,
we're not going to get into that.
But we're here for Layla's story. So yeah, let's get it out there a little bit more. This, I think, will help give people the story. We'll get you on a live as well. We'll get some videos out for her story.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
And then let's put you in touch with Joe Petito.
Yeah, that would be really awesome.
So, all right. Well, I appreciate you coming. Before we sign off for this episode, anything else that you want to share with anybody? I really appreciate you coming here and sharing her story and your story.
No, I appreciate you allowing me to do so. That's, you know, I try to do this as much as possible. In the beginning months of this, I reached out to a man by the name of, his name was Ed Parze. He had a daughter who went missing and ultimately ended up being murdered. But it took like 18 months for them to put everything together and find her body and like all the things. And he now has a foundation where he helps to guide parents going through a similar situation. And the thing that he told me on the initial phone call that we had was, do every interview, every podcast, make as much noise as you possibly can. It's the most important thing.
And that's why I would say, so Joe Petito, the Gary Petito Foundation, is similar. They created not wanting any other parent to feel what they had to feel.
Yeah. That's wonderful that people do that.
So let's hope that you don't have to do that.
It's a mess. You're not prepared for something like this as a parent. Yeah, you don't know what to do or the steps to take, or like, I didn't even know that there were foundations out there that could help for like the first 8 weeks. I had no idea. No one to guide me and say, hey, do this, don't do that. It was chaos.
Well, you can use my platform as much as you want to talk about Layla and your story. And I'm in Tennessee, so I think that, you know, that hopefully helps a little bit. And
it does.
Maybe we'll get lucky. Maybe something, there'll be a break and a positive break.
I'm hoping so.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing. I know it's not easy. And like I said, we'll get you some more coverage.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.